have been an animal lover my whole life. I grew up with dogs. And when I went to UC Berkeley, when I started college, I joined the Berkeley Organization for Animal Advocacy, got involved in animal rights work. And as soon as I learned about the scale of factory farming, that 10 billion animals are killed every year and lead these horrific lives beforehand, I realized that, I mean, it's by far the largest source of animal suffering in this country. And so I knew that that was what I wanted to dedicate my focus to. And once I graduated, I read Eating Animals by Jonathan Safran Foer, which is a really fantastic book that I highly recommend. And that talks a lot about the implications for animals, but it also provides a more holistic perspective, talking about the impacts on workers and the environment, public health too, the risk of epidemics and things like that. And I was really struck by that approach because while I was at UC Berkeley, the outreach we did was solely targeted at, you know, the animal side of things. And it certainly reached a certain segment of the population, but people often have their issue that they're working on. You know, they're working on social justice, they're working on climate change, they're working on water pollution, and we're just so bombarded with all of these things that people get overwhelmed and they're like, oh, animal rights, that's outside of my issue. I don't have time or, you know, the emotional capacity to think about something else. I'm already so overwhelmed with what I'm working on. And so I really wanted to meet people where they were at and say, you know, that's fine if you don't care about animals, but this still relates directly to the cause that you're working on. You know, it's so ironic when these groups that are working on climate change have all these meaty luncheons and things like that without realizing that they're directly contradicting their efforts. So I based the presentation largely on his book and that approach and provided, again, that holistic perspective. Dietary choices and our food system have by and large been left out of this discussion by the environmental movement, I think because they're scared to alienate people. Because up until recently, I think it's been seen as a more radical issue and also something that, you know, it does hit a lot closer to home. It ties into family traditions and a daily way of life in a way that how much water you use when you brush your teeth doesn't. So it hasn't been as big of a part of the discussion, but it's really one of the most major impacts that people can have, especially given that it's three times a day. Children grow up singing Old MacDonald, reading books about our happy farm animal friends, and I think most people still imagine that when they think of farming. But actually 99% of animal products in the United States now come from factory farms. So factory farming raises 10 billion animals in the United States every year. It's really a staggering number. One of the main goals of our organization is to highlight the interconnection of a broad array of issues that all come together with factory farming. So most people associate it with animals, but actually there's huge overlap with environmental movements, especially regarding GMOs, because animals on factory farms are one of the largest consumers of GMO crops in this country. They're fed GMO corn and soy. And actually 98% of the soy in this country is fed to animals on factory farms. So they're a major component in this cycle. A 2008 report from the UN Food and Agriculture Organization revealed that animal agriculture contributes more greenhouse gases than the entire transportation sector combined. So more than all the planes, trains, and automobiles all added up together. And a part of the reason for that is that animals directly emit methane and nitrous oxide through pooping and farting and things like that. And methane is actually 20 times more potent in warming the atmosphere than carbon dioxide. So they directly emit these greenhouse gases. And then on top of that, there is a lot of water usage and fossil fuels required to support the whole industry, you know, from the crops that are grown to feed to the animals, to the animals being shipped across the country to slaughter, and then all of the processing. And also, since the animals are spending their entire lives indoors in these artificial environments, it takes a lot of energy to power all of those air filtration systems and light filtration systems. A pound of beef requires over 2,000 gallons of water to produce, and actually similarly, a pound of butter requires over 2,000 gallons of water to produce. And how does that compare to vegetables? A pound of broccoli takes about 35 gallons of water to produce, to put it in context. Also, the agribusiness industry is extremely sexist. One of the most disturbing examples of this is that the cows have to be artificially inseminated before they give birth to give milk. And the device that they're put into when they're artificially inseminated is officially called the rape rack. That is the agribusiness term. And so there's a really fantastic book called The Sexual Politics of Meat by Carol J. Adams that I highly recommend that talks about the really violent and sexist terminology that's used by the agribusiness industry. The dairy and egg industries are predicated on exploiting these female animals' reproductive systems. So dairy cows only give milk when they're pregnant or nursing. And so in order to get large quantities of milk from them, they take their babies away. They take their calves away when they're just a day or two old. And it's extremely disturbing for the mothers and for the baby calves. It's ironic because cow milk has been marketed as this ideal food for babies, but the reason that human babies are consuming it is because the calves aren't getting to consume it. You know, the ones who the mother cows are producing this milk for are taken away and they don't even get to nurse. Even companies like Clover and Strauss, which are generally regarded as more responsible and more humane, I got a chance to speak directly with a Strauss representative, and I asked her at what age they separate the calves from the cows, and she told me within just a day or two. So unless you know someone who has their own cow, if it's being sold in a farmer's market or supermarket, chances are in order to be competitive financially, they have to use these same practices. As soon as I read Eating Animals, I was really just struck by how obvious this was. I thought, you know, surely no one could know this information and be okay with it. Everyone would agree that this is not right and something has to be done. And I was like, if only I could get this information out there to people somehow, you know, if only I could share this with them somehow. And I was like, well, I could just tell them, you know, that seemed like the most basic way. So I put together a little PowerPoint based on the book. That helped a lot because it has all the information cited. He had a team of researchers, so I didn't need to do that myself. I lived in the student co-ops at UC Berkeley, and there's about 1,200 students total in the co-ops, and they're, you know, a very willing audience. They're already pretty progressive and care about these causes. And so I started off just like, you know, a couple times giving talks to them as a hobby, and it really struck a chord with people. People really reacted. Audience members referred me. They said, oh, you should speak to this class or this student group. People in the audience wanted to join. You know, they asked about becoming a member of the organization. And so that was when it really started to dawn on me, like, oh, this could actually be a viable group. It's not just something that I do in my spare time. And I mean, it's not just luck. We're doing something right. And I think also we're in the right place at the right time. It's grown very organically. And we've started giving speaker training. So the model is to grow the organization and grow the number of people we can reach. One of the main questions that comes up at the end of our presentation is, what difference can I as one person really make? Because it is intimidating in the face of these gigantic multinational corporations. But factory farming is a unique issue because we all eat 3 times a day. So we directly participate in this industry more than any other. And so they rely on us as consumers. They can continue to do these practices because consumers continue to give them their money. Essentially, we're endorsing it. You know, we're voting with our dollar every time that we participate in this system. And so the upside of that is that we have unique power over this industry because we participate in it so often to switch our buying practices and decide that we don't want to support these practices. And the more that happens, it creates this positive cycle where the companies actually start to take notice. So Dean Foods is one of the largest corporations in the country. It's the largest dairy producer in the country. And they, a few years ago, bought Silk, which is a soy milk brand. And they've recently started to expand into almond milk and soy milk and really push those products because they see the writing on the wall. They realize that consumers are concerned about their own health, they're concerned about the animals, and that in the future, these alternative plant-based products are going to be a bigger market. And so when we as consumers exert our voice and tell these companies that we don't want to support these practices anymore, we're encouraging even these large corporations to switch to more sustainable models.